Welcome into a Monday morning edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Alex and I talking through just a brutal, like one of the worst Knicks games I've ever seen, 108-87 loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers.
And rather than actually discuss this game too much, we're going to discuss the impromptu press conference by Steve Mills and Scott Perry, who are, of course, the president and GM of the Knicks, after the game, which was extremely, extremely unconventional. And then hopefully try to build a better rotation going forward, or at least try to, you know, maybe get from our lips to Fizdale's ears in this podcast. That coming up and more on Locked On Knicks.
And before I forget, Alex and I are going to be broadcasting the Knicks game against the Chicago Bulls this Tuesday on a new app called Hot Mic. You just download them on your phone using my code Gavin23. And you find our feed, which right now is just called Gavin Shaw, but could be subject to change. I will announce that on Twitter. And you get to listen to Alex and I call a Knicks game together live while it's happening. Again, it's not on MSG. It's on a new app called Hot Mic that you can find on your app store and download on your phone if you have an iPhone. So that is really exciting. We'll treat it a little bit like a podcast and probably have some discussions throughout and also mix in some traditional play-by-play and color analysis. So that is going to be a great time. Again, it's Hot Mic, code Gavin23. Tune in to the game on Tuesday against the Bulls.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, count it one, as Fizdale pumps his fist.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives.
Becomes infectious. Welcome in to the Locked On Knicks podcast, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I am Gavin Shaw. Across the river, presumably equally depressed, is Alex Wolf. 108-87 defeat against the Cleveland Cavaliers, but we are not going to focus too much on that because there's not too much to say. It was pretty horrific. What I do want to open up talking about, Alex, is the press conference after the game, because as we were sort of discussing pre-show, it was relatively abnormal to see the Knicks front office come out and sort of address and ultimately apologize to the fans.
Yeah, so basically the Knicks got shelled. It was 108-87 was the final score. Of course, at home, at MSG, never led throughout the whole game, went down by as much as 30, which is just horrible. They narrowly won one quarter and got blown out in the other three. And it was just a really, really bad effort all around. I mean, I guess you could say the fourth quarter, they didn't necessarily get blown out, but they still lost the second half after getting, like, resoundingly losing the first half, and particularly the first quarter, which is becoming a trend for this team pretty quickly, other than that game against Dallas the other night where they really come out sluggish and don't show effort and all that. And that's kind of what Mills and Perry decided to focus on. I mean, if you want to read some of the quotes off of, I know, like, Ian Bagley and some of the beat guys, you know, wrote down some of the quotes, but more or less the gist of their press conference, which is, again, very, very unlike the Knicks. Usually Knicks executives don't speak more or less the whole year. And, you know, it's usually very pre-planned events, dating all the way back to, you know, you can't even just say to Phil Jackson. I mean, Phil Jackson was especially recluse, but even beyond that, you know, previous regimes have never been particularly talkative. But the talking points more or less were, we're not happy with the effort level. We still believe in our vision for this team. We still believe in the players on the team. And they did say, although it's sort of like say one thing and then immediately contradict yourself, but they did say that they believe in the coaching staff as well and believe in David Fizdale. But the consistent point that they kept coming back to is we're not seeing effort from this team consistently, and we need to start seeing effort from them a full 48 minutes. And then, you know, as you said, they more or less apologized to the fans, said this is unacceptable and we need to do better. The team needs to do better. And we just wanted to come out here and, you know, take some accountability for this, basically was the gist of it. And it was, I don't know. It was weird, to say the least. Big thing was Steve Mills, when he first came out, seemed like he was almost on the verge of tears to me, like the way that he was talking. He seemed very emotional, which may have had something to do with the fact that I think that they got chewed out by James Dolan for about a whole quarter. Stefan Bondi of the Daily News tweeted out that he was watching their seats, and Steve Mills, Scott Perry, and James Dolan were all nowhere to be found at the beginning of the third quarter after halftime. And then Dolan came back out early in the fourth, and Mills and Perry obviously never came back out, probably prepping for their little presser. So certainly a interesting evening and interesting post game, if nothing else, considering the game was horrific.
Yeah, I don't know. I think my big picture takeaway is I don't know if David Fizdale is long for the Knicks, and it's an interesting discussion, like how much of this you put on Fizdale versus how much of it you put on the front office, because I think it's both abundantly clear that there are a lot of head coaches who could do better with this team, but this isn't a team that I don't know if there's any coach in the league that could have made this a playoff team, and maybe there's some names, maybe I'm not giving enough credence to like some of the more brilliant guys like Pop and Rick Carlisle and Eric Spoelstra and people in that ilk, but it's a poorly, poorly constructed group. And I think we're seeing that more and more outside of a couple of aberrations as the season has gone on. And I understand that part of the asset plays this summer were just to sign guys to 1-year deals and potentially move them for picks before the deadline. And of course that can still happen, but it's more so than it's not a team that can win. What really frustrates me is that it's not a team that fits together. And I think because of that, it could pretty significantly stall out the development of some young guys. And obviously we've seen extremely promising flashes from Frank over the last few games. RJ for the most part has been excellent. And it's ultimately true at the end of the day, like the really top notch young talent is going to sort of succeed whatever context they're in. But I don't think the Knicks did them any favors with the roster they built. I don't think they did David Fizdale any favors with the roster they built. And conversely, I don't think Fizdale is doing his front office any favors with the way he's coaching this team and the way P's playing his rotations.
Yeah, it's weird to me too, because I almost wonder, you know, if there were some promises in place from the front office that Fizdale has to honor. It's kind of tough to really determine who's at fault here, because the way that I see it, I mean, from what we've seen so far, you shouldn't be starting Marcus Morris and Julius Randle together anymore. And Bobby Portis, I don't think, should be getting anywhere near the amount of minutes he's getting based off play. Like, if this is all merit-based, Bobby Portis shouldn't be getting minutes. I mean, if he's getting rewarded for anything, it's for going off in one game, whatever that was, like 5 games ago now. I mean, that's a while back, you know, in terms of an NBA season. Like, we think about it, and when we look at small sample sizes, we're like, oh, that's, you know, it's 5 games. That's not that long. But like 5 games is 1/16 of the whole season. You know, it's, these things add up, you know, and you can't, Fizdale, it seems like, is willing to let experiment over multiple games, you know, multiple stretches of games, weeks, you know, at a time. And I think that's problematic, because he needs to be more reactionary to things, but in the proper ways. It seems like he gives long leashes to guys that don't necessarily deserve it, such as like the Portises of the world, and short leashes to guys like Frank or Dotson, who clearly are out there and can contribute in ways other than scoring, but don't get the same leeway as some of the more offensive focused guys. But that's the thing we've seen going back to last season. So it's a weird thing to me, because I don't know how much of it is like when they brought Marcus Morris in after they'd already signed Julius Randle and after they signed Bobby Portis, did, you know, Morris have a starting guarantee, and did Randle have a starting guarantee? And is that why they're the only two that are like, well, them and RJ, as it's turned out now, but, you know, is that why they were basically the only two coming out of training camp with their names in pen and starting lineup rather than pencil? And it's something that we'll probably have to keep asking as the season goes on, unless the Knicks decide to just, hopefully sooner than later, you know, cut bait with Morris and trade him somewhere, get whatever maximum value they can out of him, and then figure something out, you know, with Randle, hopefully just getting him a role that fits him better, rather than this like ball handling point forward that he's clearly not destined to be when he can't dribble the ball for more than three dribbles without turning it over.
Yeah, it's hard. It's just hard to, again, I know this was sort of my point last time, but I can't really separate the front office's screw ups from Fizdale's screw ups. Like, clearly, like, I mean, I keep saying time and time again, like, I feel like, and this, I don't know, I hate saying stuff like this because it feels so condescending. And again, I always say this, these things with the qualifier, like, I get Fizdale has forgotten more about basketball than I'll ever know. But it feels like he has, like, again, this fundamental misunderstanding where he just disproportionately values guys who allege or quote unquote scores, regardless of how efficiently they do. It's like he really, what he values is guys who like to shoot. That's what it seems like. But at the same time, like, the front office gave him a team full of those guys. And, like, it's hard to construct a rotation without them when they're your highest paid, and more than that, your most talented player. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, incidentally, I mean, and partially, maybe not even most talented, but, like, they're, like, Marcus Morris and Julius Randle, like, probably are, like, two of the best basketball players on the team. They're just playing in roles that are way too big for them, and because of that, they look really, really bad. So whose fault is that? Is that Randle and Morris's fault for sucking in roles that they're not good enough to do? Is that the front office's fault for signing those guys in the first place? Is it Fizdale's fault for just saying, okay, those guys are good, but clearly they're not good enough in their roles, so we got to find a way to lower that and make the offense a little bit more egalitarian? But you can't do that because the very nature of Randle and Morris's games sort of preclude it. If they're given the leverage of saying you're the highest paid guys, they're saying, okay, then I'm going to go shoot and I'm going to play exactly how I want to play. I guess my point in this, and I know that whole thing was winding and confusing, is that these issues are so intrinsically tied up with one another that I just think this Knicks roster is irreparably screwed for this season. It doesn't fit. It doesn't work. And the way they built this, there are issues upon issues upon issues, and Fizdale isn't the guy, frankly, to figure them out in any meaningful way. So I hate to be like, sky is falling, like, this sucks, but the only solution I can think of, honestly, is, like, as you noted, trading Marcus Morris, getting off of as many of these guys as possible and playing a rotation that's heavy on Frank Ntilikina, heavy on RJ Barrett, heavy on Taj Gibson, who actually wants to help, heavy on Brazdeikis, Knox, Ellington, Trier, Dotson, even maybe a little bit of Payton when he comes back, obviously Mitchell Robinson, but just playing the guys who aren't going to hijack the offense with a whole lot of consistency. And that's ultimately, they're not going to be good. I don't even think they're going to be better that way, but that's going to be more conducive for everyone's development. And frankly, it's going to be a lot more tolerable to watch. That's the only option available to the Knicks in my mind.
I mean, it is and it isn't, you know, I think this is, so I know you're not fully acquitting Fizdale of any blame. And I know the roster, I agree that the roster construction is less than ideal because they should have known going into this season that, you know, they weren't going to have, if Mitchell Robinson's out, like we've seen in the last few games, they don't have anybody that can defend the paint. Bobby Portis, they put him out there in major minutes at the center, and that is just not it. He can't do it. He can't defend the interior. He can't defend anything, quite frankly, but he really can't defend the interior. And so when Mitch is out, like, if Mitch gets in foul trouble, even just in regular games, you know, that he's actually playing, it's a huge detriment to the team. And, you know, they should have definitely signed, you know, look at like a Dwayne Dedman or something, you know, who is on the Kings now. He would have been a good signing. You know, that's a guy that he can actually kind of shoot the three a little bit, and he can do the same sort of stuff that Mitchell Robinson can, but in a less good capacity. So, you know, I would have looked to sign someone like that, and that would have been, I think, a good signing. But I don't think you can fully take it off Fizdale either and just say it's roster construction, because even a guy like Julius Randle, all you have to do is watch about 10 minutes of film on him and you realize that this role that Fizdale has him in is stupid, and he should have taken the ball out of his hands weeks ago. You know, maybe Randle wants to do it, but it's Fizdale's job to be like, no, you're not the point guard now. Like, we tried this, it's not working. We're going to put you back in your bread and butter, have you run pick and roll. You know, and the Knicks run so few pick and rolls in general that it's just absurd when you have a guy like Julius Randle, who was actually one of the top pick and roll finishers in the league last year. So, like, run him out of the pick and roll, put him in a position to succeed. that's like step one, and that gets your, you know, your $20 million man figured out, and it would be really quick and easy. And then, you know, start valuing guys and not punishing guys on different levels. Like, for example, RJ Barrett tonight picked up two quick fouls, but he was one of the only guys that was really pushing the action for the Knicks early. And so he got subbed out with the two fouls, understandable, you know, because it was only a few minutes into the game. You don't want to get him in foul trouble. But then he wound up only playing 24 minutes for the whole game. And you have guys like Bobby Portis playing 28 minutes. You had Trier out there who played 16 minutes. And, like, despite shooting 5 of 5, I didn't think that Trier had – well, Trier was put kind of in an unfair position of trying to have to be point guard again. But I don't think that he was having the best game overall, other than making the shots that he was, because he was just letting things up constantly on defense. Yet again, Bobby playing 28 minutes. You have Taj Gibson only with 17 after he drew a start. And he had four fouls as well. But at a certain point, it's like a lot of these guys are veterans. You know, you got to just kind of trust them. Like, if Taj Gibson gets in a little bit of foul trouble, you know that he can, you know, kind of let off the gas a little bit and smartly let some plays by him, but also play good defense. It's, I don't know, it's very bizarre to me. And I don't think that Fizdale is, like, without blame here. I'm not saying that you said he was without blame, but I think that he deserves probably even more blame than you put against him, I think.
All right, can I just challenge you on two of those points? And I want to I just want to, like, kind of have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So if you take the ball out of Randall's hands, I guess who are you empowering to sort of run the offense? And I agree with you, Randall's not the solution, but my question is, and this is what I said earlier, basically, like, is that guy on the roster? Like, do you think, should it just be Frank playing, like, a much more meaningful role?
I think Frank can run pick and roll with him. I think that could definitely happen. Frank, like, for all of his faults, he's not afraid to drive right at the hoop. And if teams start sagging off him so much to the point that the layups are wide open, he'll start making them. Like, if teams look at the scouting report and say, oh, Frank's not great at finishing around the rim, he'll start just making wide open layups because they'll start, you know, shadowing too much to Randall, who's an elite pick and roll finisher. I think that you would get sort of a situation there where running pick and roll with Randall would help Frank as far as his finishing on the inside. Other than him, RJ's shown the ability to run pick and roll for sure. And once he gets back, I mean, this is obviously part of the difficulties of judging things right now, because the Knicks have been in a situation for the last few games where they only have really one viable point guard on the whole roster, but, like, true point guard, I should say. RJ can do it in spot minutes, but, you know, eventually when you get Elfrid Payton back, I think that he could absolutely run pick and roll with Julius Randle, and he can finish at a decent enough rate to make that viable. Frank, like, even if he doesn't drive at the hoop, has that elbow jumper now that he seems pretty comfortable with. So he could start, you know, shooting those just on, you know, pull-ups instead of going all the way to the hoop if that's what he's more comfortable with. I do think that there's a way to do that. I mean, maybe the person isn't on the roster either, but, I mean, you could even have Dennis Smith do that, quite frankly, because Dennis Smith has proven to be a pretty decent pick-and-roll, at the very least attacker, even if he's not the best pick-and-roll passer in the world. Like, he can take a pick and just zip to the hoop in about a second, so I think all three guys on the Knicks could potentially run it with him.
Yeah, and I guess my other issue, and maybe this could be solved by just making a really concerted effort to put the right lineups out there, but at least in my mind, I mean, I think this has been, if I were to guess, the reason why Fizdale is hesitant to make it such a significant staple in the offense is you need really good shooting across the board to have sufficient spacing for a pick and roll to be truly a two-on-two play, because now you're just going to have guys helping and, like, sagging off the shooters. And I don't think the Knicks have played a lot of lineups where that's, like, totally an option. And obviously, I mean, RJ being a much better shooter than expected helps. And you can maybe argue they could space Gibson a little bit, but Portis, and I think this is, I mean, the logic in playing Portis, I think, was to free up Randall, and that just hasn't manifested itself. And obviously we're both in agreement Mitchell Robinson is the best guy at the five, but you do that, like, he's the only spot he can be on the floor, really, where he's going to get any respect is around the rim. And if you do that, there's always going to be two people to help on Randall, and you sort of have what we've been seeing all season, where Randall gets the ball and is just immediately crowded by defenders. So I guess, like, what in your mind is, like, the lineup that you put around Julius Randle where it becomes feasible for him to be really efficient running just a pick and roll heavy offense?
Well, I still think that you can have Mitch out there, because Randle when he's playing smart, when he's not playing like he has been playing, I mean, we saw it. It's so weird because we've seen flashes of it. He's shown the ability to recognize, like, if he's in a situation where, let's say, Mitch is just kind of floating off to the side, not over it all the way in the corner, but kind of off a little bit, just kind of to, you know, keep the defender away. If the defender cheats over to Randle, Randle has shown the ability to kind of thread the needle and hit someone like Mitch coming baseline and have him dunk it, you know, and it's, he doesn't do it as often as he should, but he has shown the ability to. So if that started getting drilled into him more of like, run the pick and roll. If you get doubled, look for Mitch coming baseline or look to kick it out behind you. Don't try to take it into the double every time unless you're for sure you can make it. I think it could work. You know, it might just be me. I mean, maybe I'm just being too idealistic, I guess, but to me, it seems viable. Other than that, I mean, to answer the rest of your question about what the ideal lineup I'd want to put around, if you're insisting on starting Julius Randle, which I get the feeling is going to be the directive for the whole year, I would probably still put Marcus Morris on the bench, even though he's been playing well. I would put him on the bench and put Knox in the starting lineup and then roll with, like, Frank, RJ, Knox, Randle, and Mitch. And I think that that's a lineup that would have enough balance to make things work. And maybe if you start putting Julius in situations where he's shooting pick and pop threes rather than all these off the dribble threes that he's been shooting. You know, if you put Knox in a situation where he's out there to start the game and be there as like their knockdown 3-point shooter right from the start, maybe you start avoiding these slow starts because I think you have enough defense out there at that point with Frank and RJ up front, who have proven to be pretty good defenders, Mitch patrolling the paint, Randle, when he's engaged, has played okay defense. When he's not engaged and when he's frustrated, plays horrible defense. But the way to keep him engaged is to have a good lineup to start with. And then Knox is what he is on defense, but I think that his contribution on offense in that sort of lineup would weigh out and make him, you know, viable there. I think that could be a lineup that could maybe work. Then you bring Morris off the bench. You could still stagger in Peyton with Randle there a few times to keep their chemistry and familiarity. You know, you still bring Gibson off the bench, stuff like that. Hopefully bury Bobby Portis, or at the very least never, ever, ever again play Bobby Portis, Marcus Morris, and Julius Randle. If I ever see that lineup again, I'm going to like scratch my eyeballs out. Other than that, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my general idea. I don't know if we're going to see any of it come to fruition. I do think though that the Knicks really need to get healthy quick, particularly those two point guards that are out, because I still don't think that Dennis Smith is totally washed either. I think Dennis Smith could come back and potentially still do something for this team, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I think you made some good points. I mean, to me, it's so clear that they have to separate Morris and Randle. Those two can't be on the court together because it doesn't fit. I mean, and every game, one of them plays well and the other one doesn't. But even when one of them is playing well, I don't think it does contribute to winning if, like, the game, like, were against the Celtics where Morris was just insanely hot. But when you're getting that one out of every 7 or 8 games. And I know generally he's been good statistically, but again, it's very hard to, like, in regular, like, box score stats, measure sort of the ramifications of two players being on the floor together and how they interact and how that psychologically affects everyone else, how it affects spacing, how it affects chemistry across the board. And I mean, just pure eye tests. I'm sure if we dive into the numbers, the on offs with both of them together wouldn't be very good either, but pure eye test, it's so clear it doesn't work to me. So I think the first two steps are pretty obvious. Separate Randle and Morris, take Portis out of the rotation and sort of see what you have from there. But it's pretty clear that those are the two things that have to be done.
Yeah, yeah. And whether separating them means just putting them at different points in the lineup or just straight up trading one of them.
Yeah.
I don't really care how you do it at this point. You know, honestly, in a vacuum, if they were both, say, on the same exact contract, I would probably actually trade Randle at this point if I could and keep Morris because I kind of like his general vibe with the younger players. It seems like a little more than Randle. Like, it seems like Morris is more trusting of his teammates than Randle is. And maybe it's not even that Randle doesn't trust them, but that he's just putting too much on himself. But either way, lately, when the Knicks have been playing decent, it's usually been when Morris is out there playing within the flow of the offense, feeding off guys like Ntilikina and Barrett, and, you know, trying to actually be part of the offense rather than be the offense. And it seems like every time Randle's out there, he's trying to be the offense, and that's all that he knows how to do right now. And I think that he just needs to get kind of a reality check and be put back into a role where he can succeed rather than one where he's just putting up. I mean, tonight, for example, he put up 20 points, 16 boards. Cool. Great counting stats in theory, like on paper, but had one assist, four turnovers, played zero defense, had four fouls, and just generally was not making winning plays all night. So, you know, it's one of those deals where he's trying to do so much, and like, if you just look at the box scores, it looks like he didn't have bad games, but he really, I don't know if there's a single game this year that I've looked at and been like, Julius Randle played genuinely really good tonight.
Yeah. I mean, I said it this off season and I was so completely wrong about RJ Barrett, but I feel like as wrong as I was about RJ, I was about that right on Julius Randle. He seems like a great guy. He's clearly talented, but I think at least as a starter and as like a key starter, I don't think his game is conducive to winning. Like, he's just total lack of shooting, like how reliant he is on just going one-on-one. And yes, I think someone could simultaneously be a smart passer and still play relatively selfishly. And I think that honestly describes Randle to a T. Like, I think especially on a team full of young guys, like he's so clearly not a good fit with the rest of the Knicks and the rest of this lineup. And I'm with you. I'm surprised. Like, I really didn't think it until you said it, but I do think they should trade Randle and keep Morris, because I think Morris is just a cleaner fit. And for all of his flaws, it's because he can shoot the ball and Randle can't. And that makes, even if you're selfish, even if you don't pass the ball, even if you make some boneheaded plays, the entire last 10 years of history of NBA basketball tell us that's what makes a difference. Having that floor spacing, having that shooting ability, it's such a significant single factor. It sort of wipes away everything else I would like about Randle more than Morris. And I would be 100% great with them trading Randle right now, even if they just got a second round pick.
Yeah, I know. Some tells me that's not going to happen, but
no.
I guess we'll see. I don't know, but I don't know. I don't really have much more else to add after this game. I mean, we didn't even really talk about the game to begin with, but didn't really feel much of a need. The final score kind of said all you needed to know. Actually, the final score probably didn't scream loud enough just how bad this game was, as sad as that is. So I was pretty happy to not discuss it at all, particularly because the Knicks had a guy with a rat tail score 31 points on them in 30 minutes, which is pretty bad.
Yeah.
So.
Not good. All right. Good place to wrap it up, I think, unless you have anything else to add.
No, I'm done. I'm done. Take us home, Gavin. Oh, you know what? Let me, come out to the meetup this Thursday. As much as it's going to suck, it's at Penn 6. Let me pull up that address one more time here. This Thursday, 7:00, we're having a meetup, for the Dallas game, which hopefully they bring that same energy that they had in the last Dallas game. It's at Penn 6, 132 West 31st Street. Again, that's this Thursday, November 14th, 7:00 p.m. Knicks versus Mavericks. It's with us, Locked On Knicks, posting its hosting, Knicks Fan TV, Nick of Time Show, Knicks Film School, Hard Knicks Life, and NYK Terry and Trey. So definitely come out for that if you want to drink away the pain of another of Knicks game in the books.
All right, that's it for this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Keep that up. Have a good start to your week.